most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
So, you know, I'm still stuck on the number of people saying that the eulogies today were aimed at Trump. No, it isn't all about Donald. Even though there were a lot of moments where you go, why'd they even invite him? I mean, you know, I get it. It's a funeral. I kind of get it. He's the sitting president, but you know, just major distraction. Major distraction. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the world in Washington, D.C. Justin Duckham, Talk Media News. Justin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, great to be here. And yeah, you know, a lot of the eulogies weren't really about Trump, but the fact that there were some people who saw certain subtweets and some speeches speaks to the fact that in this political environment, just talking about common decency or humility or, you know, protecting the environment or all of these things that in previous generations have been viewed as positive qualities, one that you would expect at a funeral, seems almost like a slight against a president who is frankly just not synonymous with any of those issues. So I'm not necessarily surprised to see that response coming out. But again, it just kind of shows how far we've come in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, look, I wasn't a huge fan of H.W. Bush. You know, there were a number of things I thought he did. The Americans with Disability Act, I was in favor of. I thought it could have gone further. You know, there are a number of things that he did. You know, the midnight basketball, okay, that's, you know, fine, good. But there are a number of things he did I wasn't thrilled with. But I never had this visceral, you know, disdain for him. I wasn't a big fan of W's. But, you know, I watched his speech today, and you know, my heart went out to him. Just basic decency and compassion and civility seem to be gone in our political discourse, that even in death, we can't just take a break.
Yeah, and that's generally the sense that we've gotten in the past couple of times when there's been state-level style funerals. Barbara Bush, that became political when there was some flap over the president not being invited and being distanced from that. During Senator John McCain's funeral, that was very obviously a reaction to the era in which he died in, which was the Trump era, something that was pretty much a nonstop effort to, chastise the current president for bringing the current state of American discourse into the situation that it's in. But, you know, with this today, we saw, a brief moment of civility to a large extent. The president has been, at least when it comes to the Bushes, relatively restrained compared to how he's been in the past. There hasn't really been any signs of pettiness, like after John McCain's death when he refused to lower the flag to half-mast. Today he shook hands with Obama, didn't get in a shouting match with Hillary Clinton, so kudos to him for that, I guess. That obviously shows that we're holding him to a different standard and have certainly lowered the bar. But for the most part, this was a different moment in Washington. We put off the spending fight that we were going to be having. We put off government business as usual, suspended the legislative agenda, had this national day of mourning. And while I certainly don't believe that this is going to last, you know, any longer than it has to, I guess, at least it was sort of a breather from, you know, what we've come to expect.
Yeah, but I couldn't, you know, and it's one of these things where if I'm having an event, like if I were in charge of the funeral, or if I'm Trump's handler, I don't put him anywhere near this, because he clearly doesn't have the social graces, the diplomatic chops, however you want to frame it. He simply doesn't have the decent human skills to be able to function in those kind of environments. He sat there with his arms brooding, folded, and, evidently doesn't know the Apostles' Creed, doesn't put his hand on it. It's interesting to me that the guy who points all the fingers at everybody else, not so much himself being able to pull it off. At least nobody kneeled during the pledge there, I guess.
Well, I mean, this is coming from a president who has been more than willing to criticize others for, you know, looking or acting sloppy. He used to criticize President Obama for not looking presidential, for running down the stairs of Air Force One too fast, in a tweet that, went out during that period of time. And despite the fact that this has been an issue, not just now, but during other instances, you know, when he was in Europe and he pretty much botched the diplomatic protocol when it came to simply walking with the Queen of England. The fact that he hasn't just taken the time to brush up just really spells out who this is.
Yeah, it's sad. But I'll tell you, I watched W's speech, and my eyes welled up a little bit. I felt for the man. And as much, like I said, as much as I didn't like him and as much as his policies angered me, I feel for it and I sympathize his loss.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm somebody who grew up and went to college during the George W. Bush era where, you know, I was more of a rabble-rouser than I am these days. Somebody who attended a lot of anti-war rallies and just the usual stuff. If you were going to tell me 10 years ago that I would not have an instantly visceral reaction to George W. Bush, I would have told you you're crazy. But the fact that Trump has changed the name of the game, has lowered the bar, and has made, somebody who has made some very bad decisions like George W. Bush into a sympathetic figure in a nation that really didn't like him towards the end of his presidency, just speaks volumes.
No, I still think he was a terrible president. I mean, I just the humanity and the compassion to another human being, I feel for him. He, to me today, it was, he became humanized, I guess, is a weird way of putting it. But before, he was just that evil guy in the White House. Now I see him as, a fellow traveler, I guess, someone who's lost someone that they dearly loved. And that was really on display today. And I guess that the humanity of it, I guess that's the connection.
It was a very moving moment when Bush's voice cracked and when he, for a moment at least, became very clearly overwhelmed. And that was coming after he had spoken about Bush the president. That came after he spoke about the lessons that Bush gave him president to president. And when he got to the subject of Bush as a father. And I think there's a lot you can read into that. And that was a very human moment, to say the least.
That's the best way of putting it. I wish them the best. In their hour of grief. Let's move on. Are we already talking about 2020 and all of the hundreds of Democrats are going to be running and who are already out? I mean, can you already be out of this? I guess Evanetti has already. I didn't know he was in. I guess he's out.
So Avenatti is out. This is something that he announced yesterday on Twitter, saying that had it not been at the request of his family, he would have stuck in the race and tried to challenge Donald Trump, even though he is facing issues surrounding an arrest for domestic violence, issues surrounding, I guess, child support, and some butting of heads with Stormy Daniels over whether or not he filed a lawsuit against her wishes when it came to the defamation suit that she now has to pay the president for. There was still a portion of the party for a while before all this broke forward that thought he was going to be an effective presidential candidate. I, for some time, thought that it was going to certainly be a possibility, and also that, he had the ability to win, since it's pretty clear he would be entering the 2020 fray being able to say that he has damaged Donald Trump's presidency more than, probably any other candidate on stage, considering he brought forward the Stormy Daniels issue and everything that resulted with Michael Cohen. But, he has bowed out, something that has relieved a lot of members of the party who were certainly worried over whether or not he would be a serious candidate or would be an unnecessary distraction in the race. And it looks like the 2020 field has gotten at least a little bit thinner, which is interesting. We're now hearing people drop out from what was expected to be a very crowded race. And, that's something that we're going to be seeing more of as this moves forward, particularly as others start to gear up for that prospect.
Yeah, look, I never thought Evanetti had a chance because he hasn't really been under the microscope yet. Once you get under that microscope, every aspect of everything you've ever done in your life gets examined. And look, he's an ambulance chaser. I mean, there's going to be a lot of skeezy stuff. And I got to think he looked in his closet and said, well, I don't know that I want these bones exposed.
Well, I mean, true, but at the same time, we also have somebody in the White House who is arguably just as easy, if not more so, somebody who comes from...
Agreed. Agreed. But you're talking about different types of voters.
Fair.
I mean, you're...
Well, Democratic primary voters, not to get us off topic, Democratic primary voters, usually are the hardest core of voters who come out, somebody who believe in, I don't want to say extreme, but more robust versions of ideology and whatnot. And, I think he made a pretty good argument that people want a fighter and want somebody who can play the same game as Donald Trump. And, while I would like to think that, the left is more high-minded and whatnot, I think at the end of the day, we're all Americans and we have more in common than I'd like to admit. But
Fair enough. That's just my, I thought it would have been fun. I thought it would have been fun to have him up there, trading barbs. But it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And how's the Democratic Party going to handle, 30, 40, 50, 100 candidates? Who knows how many people are going to come out of the woodwork? I mean, I talked to a guy the other day who's declared he's running for president, state senator from West Virginia, Richard Ojeda. And I love the guy. I think he's fantastic. I just don't think he's got a snowball's chance in hell. But, I love the guy. You got a bunch of those people who they're not even going to make the stage.
Yeah, and, yesterday we had, or I guess earlier today, we had Deval Patrick dropping out of the race as well, the former Massachusetts governor. And, that is striking because apparently he viewed himself as a potential serious 2020 candidate, even though nobody else was really talking about it. And that just kind of shows that there are a lot of other people who have not been in the public eye for quite some time who have been having these private conversations with themselves. And it's almost a near certainty that there are going to be others who, don't come to the same conclusion as Deval Patrick, even though they may be just as much of a long shot candidate.
Yeah, I mean, I put them into a couple of different categories. But, the long shotters, there's a bunch of those. I hear John Kerry's actually considering an attempted comeback and then possibly Hillary back. You're going to have Joe Biden. This is the last shot, last hurrah. And I'm going, I hope we're better than that. Please, if you're listening, Hillary, no. And I'm on the no Bernie train too. No, let's move along. We need to move forward. We can't relitigate the past.
Well, I mean, Biden said yesterday that he would be the most qualified candidate, saying a decision is coming within 2 months. He's certainly seen the polls that show that he continues to be the Democratic front runner time and time again.
Yeah.
So, while there may be a lot of lip service demanding change, the polls show that there is certainly a push for a return back to at least the Obama era with Biden. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
We will wait and see how this plays out. And I hope it's not the pie fight that the Republican primary was. Or with a knife fight, or however you want to frame that.
Oh, come on. You know it will be. It will be.
Well, I'm glad I'm sitting here. And finally, Wisconsin. The lovers of democracy, the lovers of constitutional law, the good Republicans there in Wisconsin, finishing off the Walker era, much like they started it, by, usurping the will of the people.
Well, not really finishing the Walker era, if anything, extending it, even though they're... star in the state is not going to be there. This is efforts coming from the Republican-controlled state legislature to enshrine a number of the policies that Scott Walker put forward. A lot of this amounts to basically a power grab and some dirty tricks. This includes limiting early voting, something that will most likely be caught up in courts for quite a while, perhaps for a number of years, but at least where it stands now, this could very well affect the next election cycle. We have them enshrining some of the requirements for eligibility of work in order to receive certain government benefits when it comes to SNAP or when it comes to unemployment benefits. We have efforts from the state legislature to ensure that they are the ones who appoint members for a state jobs board, despite the fact that that was a governor under the previous administration. And just playing a lot of... weird games in the lead up to Walker departing office that will basically hobble the incumbent Democrat and make it seem like Walker never left.
Yeah, well, this isn't new. I mean, this is a fairly common Republican tactic, to be honest. And, it, you know, I the first time I came across it was in my sleepy little town where I live here in central Pennsylvania. The mayoral race, a couple of several years back, there was a three-way race with two Republicans, and the two Republicans split the overwhelming majority of voters here, and the African-American Democrat became mayor. And immediately the next election, they pushed for home rule, basically stripping all the powers of the mayor and handing them over to the city council. So basically they, you know, what, the black guy won? We need to neuter him right away. And that's what they did. And this is just what we're seeing on a bigger scale in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and, you know, it's also worth noting that it's not just not new. It's also something that's taking place in other states as well. We're seeing similar actions moving with the Republican legislatures in Michigan and North Carolina. There's a lame duck push to try to put forward voter ID laws ahead of the, you know, changes that are coming up there. So just a lot of, you know, games being played right now. And it's unfortunate, particularly since, you know, state politics and state political maneuvering never really seems to get the same level of national attention.
Yeah, and this is why I've always said we should do away with lame duck sessions. After the election, you should be done. It's over. Because, you know, then what happens, you've got those couple of months between, you know, the election and the new person taking office to cause all kinds of shenanigans, especially, I mean, you look at Michigan when they passed right to work back in 12. That was nothing more than a bunch of these, you know, moderate Republicans at the time who had lost their elections to crazy Republicans or being term limited out looking for jobs in industry. So they curried favor by, you know, by passing this right to work nonsense, and they got jobs out of it. It should be outlawed immediately. It just doesn't make any sense that we go, oh, people who aren't accountable to anyone are now going to make decisions in this short period of time that they can ram stuff through. It's insane to me.
I mean, that's a very good point, but yeah, I mean, at this point, it looks like the damage could be could be already done, but that's this is something that's certainly highlighting the issues that come with that lame duck session.
Yeah, so. There you go. Wisconsin, like thieves in the night again. Justin, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Hey, Rick. Thank you.
Have Always good to talk to our friend Justin Duckham, Talk Media News. Quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Let's talk.
Of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in Labor History,